Time to look through the window of baseball, a very clear window, with our good friend Bruce Jenkins of the Chronicle, brought to us by Marvin Windows and Doors.
Yep.
And, of course, Truett & White, the professional builder's choice. Bruce, how are you?
Hey, Bruce.
Good. Just carving out a few windows and doors here in my home workshop.
Hey, you went on a trip. This is good news.
I wore a shoe for the first time in 7 weeks.
Right on.
I'm thrilled. Very
right
good.
On.
And of course,
yeah, the timing was beautiful. I'm covering the finals and all is well. I'm fine now, finally.
Yeah, and your columns were absolutely the best.
Yeah.
And you know that.
Great stuff today in the Three Dot Lounge, Bruce. And so, if you don't mind, Marty, I'll ask you right out the chute. What position would LeBron James play in baseball, Bruce? If you were the skipper, where would you put him?
Oh, wow. I'd start him on the mound, I think, just to see. You know, because he's 6'8", and I'm sure he could throw the heck out of the ball. Uh-huh. Beyond that, I'd probably have him in right field.
Okay.
You know, I'm sure the good arm. He's a little too big for the middle infield. I'd say a little too strapping for catcher, for sure.
Uh-huh.
Probably third base, you're looking for a little more of a fire plug, too. I think he'd either right field or pitcher. What do you say, Marty?
First base. He's
another
McCovey. Come on, he's stretched.
Well, that really is obvious. I was just taking into account his athletic ability. They always say, you know, he could be a tight end in football or whatever. But absolutely, I mean, even if he didn't have a good arm or whatever, first base would be a natural.
You know, I said this earlier in the week. I don't know if it's true or not, but I've said it a few times that Bruce, in a 7-game series, whether it's baseball or basketball, when you get to game 4. You figure out who you are and what the series is going to look like. I think the Giants of Kansas City figured it out, and I think the Warriors and the Cavs have kind of figured out after Game 4, now you got a series.
Oh, yeah, it's terrific. Best of three, and 2 of the 3 will be in Oakland if it goes that far. The Warriors definitely, that was the real Warriors that we've seen all year, and it did take them a long time to figure it out. Not so long in the other series, but here they were kind of up against it. And, you know, some great strategy that always goes into it. Steve Kerr pushed the right buttons, and they finally looked like a recognizable team. And I think for Cleveland, they might realize who they are, and it may be a pleasant image. But things can change awful fast between games.
Well, if LeBron James scores 40 and the little guy scores 22, you got a game.
Yeah, there you go. Dellavedova, you know, maybe get a good game out of him. And yeah, so if LeBron's back up to where he was in the first 3 games, it could be down to the wire like it has been, and I hope it does.
Yeah, and, you know, in a way, it's sort of like Bumgarner carrying the Giants, but you need more of a team.
Yeah.
But this guy, he can actually change the game. I mean, he actually can, different than baseball.
Yeah, it's been amazing to watch because this is a pretty motley crew of character he's got around him. You know, by the standards of the NBA Finals, you know, when you think about teams that have had, you know, Magic and Worthy and Kareem or Russell and Kuzi. I mean, this is not a great bunch of players he has around him. They're playing really hard. I'll give him that. And the spirit and competitiveness has been great. But, I mean, LeBron is just lifting all these guys by himself in the context of a team game. And he's a team player more than anything. Despite how many points he racks up, he's always looking for that great pass. So a real special guy.
Bruce Jenkins from the Chronicle here with Marty Lurie and Patrick Connard. LeBron fell into the cameras the other night and cut his head. And I just to kind of take that sense of urgency from pundits, etc. Let me take it over to baseball and ask you what you thought about what happened in Boston last weekend, where Brett Laurie's bat got thrown into the crowd, and this young lady, Tanya Carpenter, had to go to the hospital, and now I guess she's good to go. She was released from the hospital yesterday. But which is the more urgent scenario? Players going into the camera crews or bats flying into the crowd, and what does MLB do about it?
No, it's not even close. I mean, you can move the cameraman back a little bit, and, you know, those things happen. There's not going to be a death. You know, I've been railing against maple bats for years in print, and I was just incensed when I saw that. And, you know, the aftermath is, well, we'll put up netting and all this. Okay, you can put up netting. That's not the issue. Ash bats don't break. How many times, Marty, over all the decades, did you see a guy's bat, you know, go a shard, a weapon, a sharp weapon on a pitch that was right down the middle? Pitch to Lowry was right down the middle.
Yeah, you'd hear a crack. You'd hear a crack of the bat, and then they'd look at it to see if it was broken. They wouldn't have to track it with a radar.
You wouldn't have to call an ambulance. I tell you, the bats are the problem. It's not the lack of a netting. Okay. You know, the netting would be nice. But, you know, the aesthetics are involved. That's why I think, you know, the general managers are opposed to it, because if you're sitting down there and you got nothing but fresh air in front of you, that's awfully cool. It is dangerous, but if you remove the maple bats, you've got a way better situation. And, you know, the netting doesn't save the pitcher if the shard goes out and impales him. So it just makes me furious.
All right. Well, you are furious. All right. All right. Take a deep breath.
Okay, I'm better now.
All right. We're going to get you furious again. How about Torrey Hunter? I loved it. Bruce, did you see it, Pat?
Yeah, he took his jersey off.
He took his leg plate off and his guard off. He took his jersey off. He got in the umpire's face, and the other umpire just stood there. I think it was Jeff Kellogg. He just stood there and let him do it. But I thought it was one of the great rants of all time. I miss this stuff.
Yeah, it was tremendous. It was great that it was Torrey Hunter. You know, if it had been a hot-headed kid like Bryce Harper, I mean, Harper is maturing, but he's been known to do some weird things, or Puig or something like that.
You know, 30 days.
Yeah, but I mean, but Hunter, you know, he's a class act. He's a clubhouse guy. He's one of the best guys in baseball, and to see him doing it was just hysterical. And I do miss those things.
Yeah.
Replay's taken a lot of that away. I wish somebody done something about Mark Carlson, who was working the plate last night for the Giants game. That's some of the worst ball and strike calls I've ever seen. I mean, like way low and way outside when the Giants needed some base runners.
Yeah, we haven't seen Eddie Montague today. Eddie usually walks by and gives us the grade that the umpire has. And believe it or not, Bruce, it'll be like 96%. 97%. But, you know, Pat and I were talking about it. Uh-huh. You know, you go back to the Quisenberries, the Tecolves, the Chad Bradfords, the Dick Hydes of the world.
Hyde?
The Ted Abernathys of the world. You know, these guys.
Tex Clevenger? Was he a.
No,
he a,
no Tex no. Over the Top. Tex was
okay,
over,
sorry about
was
that.
One of Monty Moore's friends down in Porterville.
Wayne Granger.
Yeah. Maybe. All right.
Well, he was more
Gene
sidearm.
Gene Garber.
There you go.
Solly Hemus. No. But, but you know, when you throw that pitch, Bruce, it has a hump to it. Mm-hmm. And it has that hump. When it gets to the plate, it's one thing. And when it passes the plate, it's something else.
Yeah, it's a great pitch. I love the pitch, and I love it when it's called properly. But, I mean, you know, when it winds up almost in the dirt and well outside, to me, a couple of those pitches, they were never strikes. You know, it was never really in that zone. And that's what kind of was bothersome to me. And I rarely go on a rant about referees or officials or anything. I just try to move on from that. But it was a little bit annoying. A couple pitches to Pagan I thought were really bizarre. Ball strikes.
This is your third rant of the segment.
I'm darn upset, I'll tell you what.
Bruce has got his shoe on, and now all that pain
really,
and anguish.
He's back.
I love it.
Let me take a happy pill over here.
All right. Well, how about a happy pill for Panic and Crawford?
Yeah.
You know, Pat was just giving me his All-Star ballot, and, you know, you really could put both of them in there and not be embarrassed and say they both deserve it.
Sure.
How great would that be? And it would be very deserved. It's not a hometown call. I mean, I saw something on the internet where they were measuring it statistically. I'm not sure if it was war or peace or whatever it was, but maybe it was war and peace. But it was, you know, showing that these guys statistically measure up as well. But to watch them, the visuals on these guys is really, really satisfying. I mean, wonderful fielders, and they're both hitting the ball great. And it's, you know, it's if you look around the league, it's not like they're getting outclassed. I mean, Crawford's right up there with Anderson Simmons this year. He's probably surpassed Tulowitzki because of the injuries, and I think it'd be great.
Yeah, you know, it's funny with all the statistics, and we joke about it, but let's say Simmons has a WAR of 2.8 and Crawford's is 2.2. Who cares?
Yeah, exactly.
Who cares? The guy plays and he hits and gets the job done. If you watch him day in and day out, maybe he'll make a couple of errors, but the plays he does make are spectacular for his team.
Yeah, believe me, I'm not a numbers guy in that regard. I just thought it was interesting that it's you know, somebody is always going to come at you with a stat, and even the stats back up these guys. And, you know, I'm not sure which WAR it is. I mean, there's at least two different ways to measure WAR, so what the heck's it good for?
Well, I'm going to blow your guys' mind now because I'm looking at FanGraphs, and Panic is fourth in all of baseball in WAR amongst second basemen, second in the National League behind D. Gordon, and then Brandon Crawford leads all shortstops in baseball in WAR with a 2.4. So those two guys are right there statistically and otherwise.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Gordon is probably going to start. He really should start for the National League the way he's hitting. And he's just that he's a dynamic presence that people know a little bit more about. But I'd love to see Panic in the game and play a few innings.
Yeah, he deserves it.
Big time.
And
yeah.
Look, you know, he hasn't even been here a year yet. I mentioned this to him yesterday. I said, you know, you haven't been here a year yet? June 21st is when he got called up.
Wow.
How about that? What he's accomplished in less than a year in baseball. You know, you look at all these pitchers and say, you know, what they won in one calendar year, so to speak.
Uh-huh.
They come up with these amazing numbers. How about this guy, what he's done?
Yeah, he's been around 300 the whole time. I think he had 304 last year in that span, and he's right up there.
He's over
again. I'll tell you, you got how fun is it to look at a Giants box score and look at the averages of the first 6-7 guys? They're all like 280, 290, 302, and Aoki, he'll be on the All-Star team.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool. I mean, last night, you know, was an aberration. Like Javier Lopez was saying, he wasn't terribly critical because he's such a gentleman, but they really should have played a day game on Thursday in New York. I mean, these guys were dead tired, and they get, you know, they don't have a hit through seven innings against a guy they really should have, you know, done a little more damage against.
So, you know, you brought up a good point about the box score, the batting averages, because if you look last weekend, everybody in the box score is hitting 280 or better.
Yep.
And I think Jason Stark, or one of the numbers guys who writes about all this stuff, said the last time you had a box score with everyone hitting over 280 with 400 or more at-bats, which is, of course, more than we have this year, you got to go back to 1930.
Wow.
Ah. 1934, the Gas House Gang, Frankie Frisch, Pepper Martin.
I think in 1930, I think the whole league hit over 300.
Yes, it did.
Yeah. I mean, think about that. So that is that's an amazing comparison, but yeah, then it's great. It's great to look at. I'm going to go on another rant here. It always amazes me when people say, "Well, batting average. What does that mean? Batting average doesn't mean anything." Well, of course it does. It tells you a lot of things right off the bat, and it's a great sight to see the Giants hitting in that vein.
1930, they changed the ball because of the Depression. And they wanted to get more people coming to the game, so they jacked up the ball to get more offense to get people out there, and that's why 1930 happened.
Yeah, the league average, everybody in the league came out to something like, it was over 300, I think the National League, and that's
the Phillies at 304
a long way from
and
that.
The Phillies at 304 and came in last, I think. All right, how about Michael Broadway? Don't we love the big fastball and the kid coming up from nowhere, 11 years in the big leagues? I can't wait to see him on the mound. I really can't.
No, it's terrific. I mean, and what a name. I mean, didn't the A's draft a guy named Hurlbutt? Boy, that's not a good look. That's a guy who had too much to drink and turned around and threw up on his backside or something. But no, I mean, yeah, Michael Broadway. If he gets jobbed, does he yell, "Hey, that was right down Broadway to the umpire"?
If he gets hit hard, the lights go out on Broadway, I guess.
There's going to be a lot of that, but I can't wait to see him. I can't wait to see Parker.
Yeah.
Exciting times with some of the new guys coming up. And you know, it's been a pattern. Young guys coming up and helping the Giants has been really, really pretty gratifying the last couple of years, and it's hopefully it'll continue.
Including Chris Heston, who did some work at Citi Field.
Unbelievable. I was on the road for that one. All I saw was about 6-7 pitches from his highlight reel, but, you know, typical Heston. I don't think he can throw a ball that doesn't move around somewhere, which is a wonderful thing to have. And, of course, he was masterful that night.
I taught him yesterday about Johnny Vandermeer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I said, look, people are going to ask you. You have to know who Johnny Vandermeer is. So I gave him the history lesson for the only man to throw back-to-back no-hitters. So he liked that. He was good. He was good.
If you're a position player, you got to know Wally Pipp. And if you're going to throw a no-hitter, you got to know Johnny Vandermeer.
You have to.
Yeah.
I said, you'll impress John Shea, believe me.
Absolutely.
If John Shea asks you that, you know.
It'd be great if he just brings it up to Shea. Shea doesn't even have to mention it.
That's right. I'd love it.
You know, I was looking up, I'm thinking about Johnny Vandermeer then.
I'd love it. I got to tell him to do that.
Well, guys, Verducci wrote a column. I don't know if either of you read it at SI.com about Heston's no-hitter. And he was talking about how Koufax struck out the side in one of his no-hitters. But that was all swinging. Heston struck out the side in the ninth all looking. And that may have never been accomplished in the history of baseball.
That is amazing. That's very cool. I remember Koufax doing that. I was listening to the radio. Very, very few TV games then, but that you would almost expect him to strike out the side if he got to that point. guys just waving at the fastball and having no idea. But, yeah, that was a little more Heston because, you know, his pitches are tricky and you don't know quite where they're going to wind up. And that was pretty fitting, I'd say.
Yeah, we'll have him on tomorrow. He talks about it. It'll be fun. Well, the last, before Koufax, remember Sad Sam Jones, Toothpick Jones?
Toothpick Jones, sure.
He was with the Giants. He was a 20-game winner here with the Giants, one of the first black aces. As a Chicago Cub in 1956, pitched a no-hitter. The ninth inning, he walked the bases loaded, then proceeded to strike out Dick Grote, Roberto Clemente, and the original Frank Thomas to end it.
Oh, yeah, third baseman, yeah.
Right, to end it. That was his ninth inning.
Nice.
How about that?
Nice.
Wow. That put a little drama into it, then mowed down three really good hitters. Really good hitters.
Really?
Especially, you know, Dick Grote was a batting champion, I think.
And Stan Hack was very excited at that point.
As well as Solly and his brother Pete Hemus.
Pete Hemus.
Ah, we love you. We love you. All right, Bruce, loved having you on. We'll have you on with us tomorrow.
Right on,
okay,
Bruce.
Guys. Talk to you then.
Have a good afternoon.
That's fun. I'm glad Bruce is feeling better.
Thank God.
You know what I mean?
Thank you. 7 weeks.
Whew.
He was ranting.